Hello again, and welcome to Supergirl Gab, the show where we watch Supergirl and then we talk about it. I'm Chris.
And I'm Katie, and this week we are looking at Supergirl Being Super, the comic from 2016 and 2017.
I was just kind of laughing because, you know, normally we're watching something, but this is the first time that we're reading something, not just like watching.
Well, you see, there are these things called books. And some of them have pictures on them as well. And while they don't actually have moving pictures, they are in a sequence and they give your eyes the illusion of story progressing sequentially, if you will.
Yeah.
They're quite comical often.
For anyone who is somehow listening to this and has never come into contact with a comic book. this was just recently finished miniseries that DC put out that's like not exactly in continuity. I don't know. It seems there's some stuff in there.
I think we can officially say it's not in continuity. I mean, I'm reading the current series, and this feels kind of strictly outside the realm of at least like the main continuity of Rebirth / New 52. It's very much its own thing.
It's sort of, you can still easily tell where it's taking place and kind of what the idea is, but it's definitely not, it seems like a little bit more, maybe like a little bit more real world inspired than how the fictional DC universe.
Except for all the super science. And
well, yeah, girls. You know, but I mean, with that exception, but it's like kind of trying to do a little bit more. It seemed like it was maybe trying to be like a little bit more of a grounded version of this kind of fantastical tale.
It's very much a what if this was just ever so slightly different. And we will get into the differences and kind of the take. But I wanted to do this one because it's a fairly contained kind of mini series that was just finishing up the summer and the trades coming out. We think it's August. It's either August or like in the next week or two. But that is August because time is going by way too quickly. That just hit me. But I'm not sure. So sometime in the next month or so.
Soon.
Very soon. It's also a series that is, I believe, complete all female creative team. I am double checking. I believe it's an entirely female creative team, which is something that we don't get to see a lot in Supergirl, that we haven't seen in quite a while.
I don't think we see that any comics.
And it's just. It just feels also like a kind of like what a world we're living in now that we have not just Supergirl in her own series again and not just the TV show, but then we have this whole other mini series along with like Bombshells and her showing up in other books. And so, yeah, it feels like a wealth of Supergirl stories.
Yeah. I mean, it's like it's a real good time, I guess, to be Supergirl, that just thinking about that it's like the market can currently sustain two Supergirl books, like, and you know, and that they both seem to be doing well. And I'm sure that this is going to end up being one of those trades that they sell like a million copies of, you know, for quite a while. Like one of the, it seems very much like it's not going to have any kind of, it's not going to have a hard time at all finding an audience that does, among people, you know, beyond people who just normally read comics.
Yeah, it's interesting because, and I don't want to speak too soon, but there's hints that DC is finally getting the message that they should be trying their best to get these books to people in a format that makes the most sense. So while they did print and publish the four segments of this miniseries, they did it like every 2 months, which kind of just shows that like, we want to get this story out there, but it's not like we aren't expecting the individual bi-monthly comics to be the big seller part of this series. It's clearly preparing for the trade. And these are also, especially with Joelle Jones, who does the line art for this, it's really them investing in these creators in a big way. And like I said, I think that now that the trade's coming out, I'm really interested to see how they push in the market outside the direct market. So yeah, it does feel like this was very much catering to a different kind of readership, even though I think that this is definitely something that you can read if you're a fan of Supergirl and in other stories. But yeah, it's kind of a really cool series, and as soon as I read the end, I DM'd you and said, like, yeah, we really need to cover this because I want to talk about this book.
Yeah, it seems like something you could totally, if you were already a big fan of Supergirl, you could read it and not feel like any of your sort of sensibilities about Supergirl were offended. You know, you don't have to feel like anything with it messed, you know, nothing. I can't imagine a Supergirl fan reading this and just being like, oh, this really, like, this really ruined the character.
Yeah, or exactly. Like that.
Because it's like, it still totally feels like, you know, a different take on her, but it still totally feels like a Supergirl that you would already know.
Yeah, exactly.
But also clearly like a thing that can kind of stand on its own. And this is not saying that I'm like, we have not talked at all about like how we felt about it, like if we liked it or not, because there was parts in this that I really, really liked. And there was also parts in it that I absolutely hated. But it was things not within sort of context. It was not things really that had to do with the story itself. So probably things that are like, then it's going to be like, oh, that's clearly just a personal problem. But anyway, so.
Now I'm guessing what these are, because I have some guesses about what that could be. But yeah, so I guess we've been kind of tiptoeing around like, oh, this is a different take. I feel like we should just dive in, but
yeah, let's just get into the plot of the thing.
Yeah, so the plot is that it's very smart because it's all from Kara's point of view, and she, in this version of the story, instead of Clark finding her, instead of Clark being Superman at all when she crash lands, it's her crashing in a farm in Midvale and essentially being like I think she was maybe like 4 or 5. I forget exactly how old she is, but the
Danvers, not a baby.
Yeah, definitely not a baby.
But not a baby.
Yeah, exactly. So enough that, but still young enough that she doesn't really remember the trauma of what happened. Just like
she has no idea who she is or that she's from another planet. She just knows that they found her in that thing. And I was like, well, okay, that's definitely a different approach for Supergirl.
Yeah. Yeah, like I think it even implies that they didn't realize that she necessarily like crashed from space.
Yeah.
Or else she would have like that would have been something in her head. But the Danvers who have a farm and they're kind of like her dad in this, instead of being, I don't think he's even a scientist. He just like he distrusts the government and he's very like, grumpy.
It says something about him. Doesn't it say something about him just being some kind of farmer or whatever?
Yeah, and like his fam, like it was the family farm, and it says, and he's kind of quirky. He doesn't celebrate birthdays, but like,
yeah,
because he doesn't believe in years. And also it's funny because first of all, he's a very different take on Kara's dad than we see on the show, obviously. I mean, for one, he's like a completely different body type, and he's bearded, and he's kind of grumpy, and the mother is actually really curvy, and she's kind of, I forget, there's an old pinup that was like a plus-size pinup from like the 30s, I think, and I cannot, someone will tell me afterwards, but it's very much like that body type and very like sweetheart face. But they're just like these two kind of quirky but mostly normal parents who love this kid so, so much and is raising her to be a normal teenager. And Kara knows that she has superpowers, but she's not allowed to tell anyone. But her body is, like, having some weird changes. And on top of that, like, some weird stuff's going on with her powers that we can kind of tell is clearly related to the coach of her track team giving them all, like, tracker, like, tech trackers to wear.
Fitbits, basically.
Yeah,
evil
basically.
Fitbits.
Evil Fitbits. So it almost reminded me of, like, every episode of, like, the first season or two of Sailor Moon. It's always, the bad guy is always, like, this new business person handing out free or, like, offering, like, offering, yeah, like, discounted something. And whatever that, like, so it's, like, there was always evil capitalism going on where the capitalism was just a front for them to have, like, their soul sucked out or, like, their energy drained. And this is, it's very, like, much that.
Yeah, this totally feels that same way. Like, you just immediately, as soon as they put those on, I was like, this seems like something. Well, my big worry was that, like, oh, this is not something sinister, but it's definitely, like, a plot point. Because I was thinking, like, the coach was going to, like, be able to triangulate where she was and, like, how fast she was going. And then it was going to come out at, you know, then some point later in it, the coach was going to be like, how are you doing all of this? You know, but she doesn't know what it is. She just can, you know, the data is telling her something crazy is going on with this girl. And then it turns into, you know, like, oh, somebody might find out her secret. When that first part happened, I was still thinking that maybe this thing was going to be, like, very, very grounded. And it wasn't going to be that, did not expect at that point.
No, evil scientists.
Did not think evil scientists were going to be happening. I thought it was going to be trying to, you know, maybe just completely a world with no superhero-y kind of stuff.
Yeah, I should probably say we are going into spoilers. Sorry for people who want, like,
definitely
go read the book. I think it's worth reading. But I just realized, like, oh yeah, if people want to, like, know about the book, they're going to find out a lot.
I'll definitely put up in the show notes and stuff that it's spoilers. And
we talk about the whole thing. So I don't think this is, like, a huge surprise for people. Yeah. So she's having, like, these weird feelings about her powers. And then, in the first issue, we get introduced to her friends, Dolly, who is very gay, and, she has purple hair, and she's funny.
And she's named after Dolly Parton.
Yeah, and then she immediately rejects that. And then Jen, who is sporty, like, she really wants to be a professional athlete. That's her focus. They're all on the track team together, which I thought was a really nice way to do it, that they were all on the track team. Because a lot of times, like, oh, like, the the punky lesbian isn't going to be on the track team. Like, no, actually, lots of kids that are, like, into different things are also athletes in high school. It's not, the jocks
are not necessarily...
Same.
Yeah, it's not like that same sort of, like, complete separation between the two that there used to be.
I knew so many people who were in drama club that were also on the swim team. So it's like, it's not like there are multiple interests and, like, you know.
People have layers. We're multifaceted.
Yeah. And also, like, Midvale is really small. They have to have, like, there's not that big of a track team, it seems, because they're the main people running.
Yeah,
so,
exactly.
But anyway, so
very small school.
Yeah, exactly. It's like a farming town. It's really tiny, and they need, like, everybody. It's like in Hoosiers where they have literally, like, 10 or, like, 9 people on the team, and then, like, when 2 of them get mad at the coach, they just quit, and they're like, we're, like, we have, like, 2 backups at this point. So this might be a problem. So they're on the track team together, but they're best friends. They don't really argue. It's more like light ribbing. They seem to just have a really good relationship, and she has a really good core of friends.
That was one of the things that bothered me, in that it was like, it just, they could have felt like so much more real characters, in that people don't talk like that to each other. People aren't just constantly, like, quippy and whatever with each other in real life. And it always just reads, to me, it always kind of reads as cringy when, you've got something kind of trying to be serious, and then but then at the same time, you're trying to have people just be like, sound like Aaron Sorkin wrote them or something, you know, where everybody's just constantly got something. Does that make sense at all?
I mean, I guess so. I think it's a style choice, and I can get why that can be annoying. I didn't find it as much, but then again, like, we've talked about this before. You haven't seen Gilmore Girls.
Exactly.
You would hate Gilmore Girls by this conversation alone. If you can
pull it off, that's fine. You know, if it's like, if it's something where they make it work, then awesome. You know, it doesn't bother me then, but it's like, it's one of those things where if it's even off just a little, for me, it's like dialogue is like one of the biggest things for me that can like put me off of something. And it's not just in something like this where it's, you know, sort of outside the normal, you know, sort of how comics normally sound. It's not just about that, because it's in just every week I go to the shop, you know, and I'm getting new stuff, and I'm like, please don't let the dialogue in this make me want to tear it up. You know, that's like one of those things that's just like can put me off so quickly, where I'm just like, oh, even though this art is great, I'm having such a hard time enjoying this, because if the dialogue sounds even like, I don't know, maybe that's like way too super picky of me, but it's, I can't help it.
I honestly, like, I get it. I just didn't see it that way. I don't think it was I don't think it was that far off. Look, and it's been a long time since I was a teenager, so I don't want to say like this is how teenagers talk.
Right.
But I felt like it wasn't that, for me, it didn't ring that bell of like, wait, this sounds like not some, like this doesn't feel like a good fit dialogue-wise. So I don't know. It, like I said, it might just be a taste thing, but
yeah.
I didn't see it as much of a problem, especially because like after the first issue, like
it wasn't. Let me just say that it wasn't through the whole thing. It was there were just places where it like, because some of the, there were some parts of this that I thought were just, you know, I thought the dialogue was great, but it was just in some of those places where it didn't click just right for me. It's like so cringy to me.
Well, my thinking is that, and again, I can kind of see why I lean towards it. For me, when I read the first issue, like, again, the bells just didn't, like, those bells didn't go off for me.
Okay.
I also feel like in terms of writing, like, the choice of writing it that way, they had to set up really tightly the relationships, because everything changes in the second issue.
Yeah.
So I get why, if anything, I get why Tamaki, because this is written by Mariko Tamaki, I don't think we mentioned that yet, why she leaned a little Gilmore Girls-y in terms of the dialogue being kind of cheeky and clever, and you know what I mean. And
just really doubling down on the teen speak and trying to, I don't know.
It didn't really bother me too much. And maybe if it had happened throughout, but I felt like once the second issue hit, because some really serious stuff goes down, then it felt like the characters, like, I mean, they weren't as lighthearted anymore. So there was a lot more serious talk going on. Excuse me. Let me think. So we end up, first of all, I'm trying to think. Should we keep going to the next part, or should we talk about the art first?
Well, there's something I want to ask you about is what on earth was the deal with that part? I guess it's like the back half of the first issue, that part where she pops that zit and then it like an ocean of gross stuff comes out, and she's cleaning for 3 hours, even though she has superpowers. She's, you know, we know she has the classic Supergirl powers, or some of them at least. I guess maybe she does. Maybe she doesn't have super speed.
Yeah, that was a choice. Yeah, I don't know if they ever say that. I don't think she does. I don't think she has super speed in this. I think it's just strength and flying.
Oh, and she's got the heat vision.
And the heat vision. You know, I don't know if she has that until later. That might be a thing that she discovers she has. I don't entirely know. I think it might be I don't know if it was her powers are being screwy, or this is literally a Krypton thing.
So, yeah, I mean, like, it was baffling.
Yeah.
Because nothing else in the book was like that. I would thought, like, when that part happened, I was like, oh, okay, they're going like a really different direction with it. Like, yeah. There's going to be a whole thing, you know, that like she's, this is very, her body's very different.
Being weird.
Yeah, like it was going to turn into a whole thing, but then nothing else is like that.
Yeah, I don't think it works super well, especially because so much of the second, third, and fourth parts of the book are kind of very focused on what happens in those, like, the catalyst that kind of drives the rest of the story.
Right.
But the one thing I'll say about that part is that, okay, so Supergirl, if you didn't know, has a history of DC Comics sexualizing her. I say this as if we don't already know this. There's a lot of like, oh, I'm a teenage girl, and also, you know, but then like being tantalizing, or like obviously the upskirt shots were a thing for a long time, and the like weird midriff that like just kept going.
Yeah.
And what I liked, the thing that I thought was good about this is that, and it ties into the art in general, is that she looks like an actual human being, like an actual like girl her age. And also, like, girls' bodies are kind of gross. Like, there's some gross funk. Like, puberty is not a magical time for girls, just like it's not a magical time for boys.
Right.
And I could kind of appreciate the idea that, like, that when girls' bodies do weird things, it's like, it just feels gross. And right. I felt like that's kind of what they were trying to do with that. Like, and then her going, what in the heck is happening to me? And well, why is my body being like, gross?
There was no payoff to it. There was, you know, nothing else like that happened throughout the rest of it. So then you're like, okay, did they do that part and then go, you know what, that was a terrible idea.
I kind of wish that they had called it back in some way, not necessarily another zit blowing up, but another part of her body.
Any other kind funky. Of, yeah, any kind yeah. of other weird, you know, sort of like body yeah, horror type thing.
Like something just to tie back in. I can definitely agree that it was a little uneven in points, and that's probably the scene that's most easy to point out.
It just, like, it leapt to mind while I was thinking about that first episode, or that first issue.
Yeah.
It's so hard not to say episode.
I know! I've had this problem, but it feels also like whenever I'm talking about episodes of things and I say issues because I'm thinking of comics then. So, I still, like I said, I didn't have as much of a problem with the first issue, just in general, but I do get that it's probably the most uneven. I feel like the rest of it is fairly...
The rest of it's so focused. Consistent. That first issue is like trying so hard. Not trying so hard, but it's, you know, it has the hard task of like introducing a character. Setting everything up and like introducing a character that you know and making you feel like this is the character that I know, but also trying to establish that. But hold on.
Yeah.
We're doing a different thing. So like you can't scare people off in either direction.
Yeah, and then setting up all the plot points. I mean, like, I was thinking about this literally just today because I'm in the middle of writing issue 4 of my comic book, and I was thinking...
Which is available on Comixology?
Yeah.
And what's it called?
It's called Moonlighters, and it's also on Amazon, and I have a new official professional Amazon page, so that's super exciting. Look at exciting.
That. Woo! Which we will definitely link to now in the show notes.
Yay!
Everyone, update your favorite folders.
Yeah, bookmark that stuff. but I was thinking about this today, like, the third issue is actually coming out this next week, and it's the one that I feel like has, like, is actually starting to get fun and has, like, in it, the plot's building.
Yeah.
But also there's a lot of, like, I get to actually play around a little more. And
you get to have all that heavy lifting out of the way, finally.
Exactly. And I was thinking, like, I've always had an appreciation for the fact that, like, that monthlies or even stuff like this were miniseries that take a few months in between, that... I have a lot of patience with the first issue because there's so much to do and you're setting so many things up. So, it, yeah, I mean, you look at this, and I still feel like it's a really strong first issue, especially considering that it's it has nothing else, except for, like, if you love Supergirl already, but there was, it was one of those things where it's kind of starting from the ground up. But, yeah, well, it is...
It needs to establish that whole thing of, like, yes, this is Supergirl, but she doesn't have any idea what's going on
yet.
You're ahead of the game with her. You know, so, like, go on this little journey with this character that you know to, you know, to get to where you are, since she doesn't know what's going on yet.
Yeah, I mean, it's a very, it's very much, it's almost like she has, I don't want to say she has Clark's story, because I think that's unfair to this book, like, completely unfair to this book.
It is a little bit, though. I mean, there are definitely some crib notes there.
Yeah, and there's, but it really comes down to, does she remember her time in Krypton? Because that makes all the difference. That changes, but she is an American teenager. That's all she remembers. She remembers being a teenager living in a, in the middle of America. And that changes how she talks. That changes the way her, even her brain thinks. I mean, she only knows this one language, unless, like, I'm assuming she knows Spanish. She probably knows Spanish, but she doesn't know Kryptonian. And that's so massively different from if she's a kid who crashes down to Earth and remembers everything from her life on her own world.
A teenager, even. Like, starting off on Earth, already a teenager.
Yeah. Yeah, and goodness knows, very different take from the movie version that was, like, that made no sense. But as a personality. That's so unfair. Yeah. We defended that movie for like 3 hours. I don't know why I'm crashing down on it. I'm being a jerk.
You're trying to just balance things out in case people are like, they defended it a little too much.
Yeah, that was a little too much. So I will say, before we get on to, like, the meat of the story, the majority of the art in this, which is done, the line art is done by Joelle Jones. I believe some of the inks are done by Sandu Floria. The colors are done by Kelly Fitzpatrick. And I'm going to also throw in the letterer. The letterer is Seida Temofonte. But because the lettering was actually quite good in this, too. But
there were some parts I didn't like.
You didn't like some of it?
There was most of the dialogue stuff was all good, but there's, like, some real iffy choices on some of those, like, sound effect bubbles or sound effect like text, stuff like that.
I'm gonna have to scroll through. I will say the only thing that was kind of tough was the color choice for the narration boxes.
The ones that were like blue. The blue with the,
yeah, because sometimes they blended in and it was hard for my eye to catch them. Sometimes it worked fine. It was just, again, that color choice. And there were a lot of times when she was in her room at night and it they would kind of blend in, you know?
Oh, yeah. Okay. I gotcha.
Yeah.
I completely forgot about those scenes. And now I'm wondering, like, oh, did I maybe completely miss some of those also?
Oh, no.
Probably not. I probably didn't. But now I'm going to be worried.
But the majority of the art in this, like I said, the character designs done by Jones are really pretty darn stellar. I like the fact that they look like teenage girls. They're the framing.
They're
of
also
it is,
immediately, like, distinct too, while still looking like real people.
People, yeah, yeah. The coloring is also really pretty. There is a definite jump between 1 and 2, I think. You know, I think the colors were done. I think, oh, you know what it was? It wasn't the colors, but it was the inks were done by Sandu Floria for the first issue, but not for the rest. And there is there is a little bit of a jump between. You can definitely see some slight differences in the art. Not bad, just like as when I was rereading it, I actually, because I was reading these as soon as I bought them originally, and so I only noticed it once I was reading them back to back. But I really love the art style in it. I like the fact that when Kara's on the track team, she actually has her track uniform is like a, it's basically like a sports bra and kind of skirt shorts. And it's funny because it's clearly supposed to be reminiscent of one of her very midriffy outfits, but the way that it's drawn, avoids it looking cheesecakey or like look at like being so, you don't think?
I thought she I did not
it's
think
not my that favorite that... it's not my favorite, but it's definitely, I mean, but it shows how in another artist's hands that it, same outfit.
Oh yeah,
would look
yeah,
way
totally
worse.
That well, but also if a guy had drawn that and it still looked exactly like that, I would feel very like this doesn't have to be quite that. But it's like knowing that not only was it a woman that drew it, but it's like a woman involved, you know, women involved top to bottom. But it, so it makes me go like, is that how distorted, you know, sort of like the comic vision is, where you still like go, this has to be like a little more, you know, comic booky, for lack of a better term.
I guess.
You know what I mean? Like where we expect stuff to look a certain way in comics, and it's like, oh, this is how women are presented in comic books. So it's like still, I don't know. I may be overthinking it.
You might. Honestly, you might be. All I know is that like
it wouldn't be the first time.
They're all clearly wearing sports bras, and none of them have like cleavage lines, and that makes me really, really happy. Because like sports bras flatten you out. That's what happens. And anytime that they're drawn so that they don't do that, it's really like it's really telling to me. So that felt very, again, it never feels like they all look like they're like they have teenage bodies. They don't look like they're 25-year-olds.
Right. Yeah, I mean, I was not trying to like have a, there was not like a knock on the art.
Yeah.
You know, it was just like, it was kind of weird where I was like, this still seems like maybe a touch. She's supposed to be 15 in this. And it's like, you go, is this a little too something, you know, like.
Maybe.
You know, it's like, well, there's some of these comics where I think about, like, my friend Matt, who is frequently on one of my other shows, he's got two young daughters. And, like, so when I'm looking, and they're, like, super into the DC superhero girls.
Yeah.
They're, like, crazy about it. And when I start, you know, like, when something like this comes out now, and I go, this is clearly, you know, clearly aiming towards like a young female audience, which is awesome that they're doing something like that. But, and then I, like, I think of them, like, I go, like, could I give this to them? Or would it be too, you know,
I
like
mean,
too
I will
much
say
for them?
It is rated T plus on the back.
Well, okay. Yeah. See, there you go.
So, I mean, I don't think that they're going for an all ages book, but I think that they are going for like,
but if it's good, like you're going to, of course, like want to introduce, yeah, you know, introduce kids to good stuff.
Yeah. I just didn't, I mean, here's the thing, you know, my opinion on, like, I just complained about the Gotham City garage, I think garage, I forget what they're calling it,
yeah,
but the
that's
new,
what it is.
Yeah. I had like not even huge. It was huge in my heart, but fairly short Twitter rant about midriffs in comics and how they frustrate me and it just like it bugs me. For this is what I'm thinking for that particular scene, we rarely see her actually with her midriff. Like it was literally for a track uniform, which is something like when I was a teenager long time ago, I would go running. I did sometimes only wear like a sports bra and shorts. So, and literally her and all of her outfits afterwards, cause I'm kind of skimming through right now, all of her like regular outfits are, don't have her like wearing like, you know, tiny tops and
yeah,
whatever.
Yeah.
So, and I think that's the difference. If it was her outfits all together had that kind of look, that would be questionable, but they do a pretty good job of stylizing the wardrobes for the teens,
yeah,
throughout the rest of it. So it didn't bother me as much.
Yeah, and that's totally fair.
So the other thing I want to say before we get on to like the second, third, and fourth kind of larger
storyline. Well, we're jumping around in here.
Yeah,
so.
Yeah. But I want to make sure that I bring up my favorite page in the first issue and pretty much my favorite page in the whole series, or one, very much one of them, is when her dad says, oh, come to the barn, I need you to help me move the tractor. and she's on her phone and lifting the tractor right over her head, and that's the first time we see her using her powers in the book. And she's, like, so bored. Like, she's texting with one hand, and it's... I saw... This was one of the first pages I saw. It was without lettering when it was first... When the previews first came out, and I might have had, like, a little gasp because I was so... I was just so excited. It felt like... I don't know if this is going to become an iconic image, but I wanted it to be because it was such a perfect moment of just, this is, it's such a good moment of kind of really establishing the character she is. She's used to her powers. She doesn't really have a problem with them.
Except for when she doesn't have that like angst that some versions of people with amazing powers want to do.
Yeah, her parents don't want her to keep them hidden away because they don't trust, which is totally reasonable. But they don't mind her using her powers by any means, and this is like normal, and it feels like. And then all her dad says is you and your GD techno phones just shove it, just shove the tractor against the wall. Yeah, there's so much charm in a lot of the moments, and they use full page panels in really interesting ways. They're very much kind of statement pages. Gosh, I still love that first cover where she's upside down, but we see her right side up. And right. you see the world farmhouse. Is upside
down.
Yeah, and you just look at her face as she's like, oh, it's so good. Like, none of the other covers are fine, but that first one is really, like, it's clearly going to be the cover of the dang trade.
The trade, yeah.
Yeah. So...
That's like your perfect image that sells. Like, you can look at that.
Oh, absolutely.
You look at that and you already kind of get an idea of what the story is supposed to be.
I almost sold a stranger because I think I had on a Supergirl. No. I had on it was during winter, so I have a Batman winter hat. And a girl said, like, oh, yeah, I really like it. And we started talking, and she mentioned Supergirl. And I was like, you really should try this book. And I don't think she bought the book. But when I just showed her that cover, she went like, oh, that's really pretty.
Yeah.
And she started scrolling through it. So I felt like there was at least a win that I let her know that it existed. So book two starts with the track meet, but basically there's been a big earthquake and the ground has split, and her friend Jen, who's the athlete, has fallen into the earth and is hanging off the side. And Kara rescues
Dolly.
Rescues Dolly, and then
she's trying to save Jen.
Yeah.
And right as she's like about to get over there, then like a light pole or something is about to fall over, or telephone pole or something is about to fall over on Dolly, and she has to bolt back to like catch it before it falls on her, and then try to get back to Jen.
Yeah, and then she does get back to Jen, and she's holding her, and Jen's about to pass out because she got hit over the head, and right at that point, Kara's hand starts to glow, and it did this same thing earlier, or in the first issue, because she says, oh no, not again, and her hand slips, and she ends up dropping Jen. And she's only caught by one of the rescue crews. And so as far as the book is concerned, Jen died in the accident, even though I don't think they say that they found... I don't think that they actually found the body. I think they just assume because she fell so far.
Yeah.
Which to me says that if they ever do a sequel to this, then there's always a chance... Because unless you have the body, and even when you do...
Yeah.
Because...
You think they're going to do more of these?
I don't know. I think that they've... I feel like they have, as we will talk about, they have kept it wide open.
Yeah.
To do more. They have left several loose ends that can easily be picked up. So I feel like it's... I don't mind the...
I'm so glad you brought this up, because that thing about whether or not she had actually died, like, kind of stuck in my head the whole time, and I kept expecting her to still be, like, I thought Kara was going to find her down.
I wondered that too.
There's even one part where it says that originally they show those pictures of four people that died. And then, like, a couple pages later, there's, like, a news thing that says about the three people that died. And I was just like, wait a minute. Are they trying to say that, oh, okay, now we... And then they say something about it at the funeral, I guess, about them not finding the body. So I thought that was totally just me being, like, paranoid about, like, oh, what's going to happen? Or being too hopeful that, you know, everything was going to work out.
Well, it's so rough. I mean, I didn't realize... When I read the second issue, I'm like, oh, this is going to be a story about, like, mourning a death. Like, this got a lot heavier than I expected it to. And, yeah, I wondered if she was going to show up again. I just get the sense that they wanted to keep it ambiguous whether or not she could come back. And I also get that maybe there also wasn't a whole lot of time. And then to explain everything. So the second issue is largely her dealing with the loss and also the guilt and also concerns about her own body and the fact that she feels like her powers are, she can't rely on her powers anymore.
Right.
And it was like, she says the one time I needed it, and it didn't, and I wasn't fast enough, and I wasn't able to do it.
Yeah.
I
could have seen that playing out, like, really, where she's, you know, like, almost, then she's, like, terrified to use her powers.
Yeah.
After that.
And it's almost like, instead, it's just frustration that she didn't, that they didn't do exactly what she needed them to do, and that her body wasn't. Again, it's interesting, and I don't know. I really want to give it a full read one more time once I have the trade and kind of really dig into it. But there is something about her as a teenage girl and feeling like her body is, if not failing her, then, like, not living up to what she needs it to be. Yeah. And there's some interesting stuff going on with that. I don't even think even necessarily direct parallels to, like, most teenage girls' experiences, but there is that frustration of why is my body doing this? Why do I feel so frustrated? Why do I feel so tired? That was always a big thing. And I also really appreciated how her and Dolly's reactions were and how their friendship, it obviously changed, like, the dynamic was very different, but they didn't shut each other out, but they also weren't 100% good.
Yeah, either. Things were not just immediately back to normal either.
Yeah, and they have, like, moments where they were able to kind of use humor, because that's such a core part of their friendship, but then they still have this moment after where they're just hugging and crying.
Yeah.
I also, just side note, because we were talking about... the outfits in this, Kara's wearing, like, a really great sweater in that scene that, again, feels like a very Kara from the TV show sweater.
Yeah.
And I liked Kara's mom in it. Again, she's very, like, I'm trying to think of the, there's this very specific pinup icon that was, like, from, I want to say even, like, maybe the 20s. But I,
you know, if you'd asked me before we started, like, if I thought that there was any way something in this comic was going to make you bring up a pinup model from the 20s, I would have said, no, I can't really imagine that.
I'm just going to, you might hear clacking from the.
You got to type it in.
Yeah, I got to type it in. I can see her face, like, clear as day. It's going to drive me crazy. Oh, come on. Hilda, that's it. It's Hilda. Was the character. But she, it was always very, like, very cute, but plus size,
okay.
Stuff. But I would almost, I mean, she even has kind of that orangey brown hair, like.
You've got to send me the link to whatever you're looking at so I can put it in the show notes.
Yeah, I definitely will. There was I found an article about it. There we go. But yeah, her mom is really sweet and very supportive. But then at the same time of her mourning, she keeps kind of half remembering the dream that she always has, which of course we know. We know exactly what it is. But again, it's this, like, the second issue ends with, or towards the end of the second issue, it's not the very, very last scene, but there's a page where she's having the dream and she sees her mom in, like, a flowing red cape and her dad standing by somberly, and they're speaking a language that she doesn't understand, but she hears Kara Zor-El, and then she goes out to the pod and she's frustrated because... She sees the cape, and she goes, "What does this mean?"
Yeah, what is this all about?
Yeah, like what? Like why is my life so complicated? And then we also get a little more sense that something's going on because she starts to see visions of someone saying, "Help me!" and being trapped.
Not quite sure how those visions were working.
In retrospect.
Yeah, exactly.
Something. I think it was because she had the tracker on, and so it was either...
I don't know.
Yeah, there was some plan with the tracker, and they figured out that she was Kryptonian specifically because it was connecting with something science.
I don't know. That might merit some further investigation.
It's also, I mean, again, the one problem with it being 2 months in between each of these issues is that you forget all the plot points.
Right.
And I'm only, like, I'm not going to lie, I kind of skimmed the third issues and the fourth in my reread, so I also have not paid attention to some of the explanation for this. I'm just kind of like, all right, that made sense. So in the third issue, a lot of it is her kind of dealing with the fact that she's starting to remember this stuff, and she's still obviously dealing with her friend dying and feels super guilty, and she's also like, also I might be an alien, and this is all really heavy, and this kind of sucks. she has this really
She's never too like. You know, torn up about it though. She's never too mopey about it. It's kind of like there's too much going on for her to have time to like. So, which is ends up being like, you know, since she just is forced to just go ahead and move on with things, then it's, you know, it's like a healthier outcome.
Yeah, I mean, and that's the thing. She's by no means like a robot when it comes to her feelings about these things. It's just that like. She also just doesn't have the time to like to completely be consumed by it because she has other responsibilities.
Well, yeah, I mean, and they do that. They do a good part, you know, a good job of showing her in that other part, you know, after Jen dies, showing her just being very like where there is something that she has time to be like upset about. And then that's kind of contrasted by how then when this other stuff starts happening. And she doesn't have time. She's like just got to jump headlong into being Supergirl, basically.
Yeah. There's also a really good flashback scene, where you find out that she has only seen her grandparents once, or like the last time she saw her mom's parents were 7 years ago. And you see this fire. This is such good story. This was such a good. Little sequence because you see was 7 years ago and you see a fire in the barn and you think, oh, they died. But no, it's that she saved them. And the reason why she hasn't seen them is because they refuse to come back.
Yeah. Like they're saying something like, well, I think she only saves it was the grandfather was out in the barn doing something. And the grandmother was just like out in the yard, you know, screaming,
like freaking out. Yeah.
Yeah. But it's like they have some that little scene where they're like in the kitchen, you know, kind of bandaging the grandpa up, and it's like they're saying something's not right with her. instead
of being
like,
call the authorities.
Yeah, instead of being like, oh my gosh, it's amazing that she saved me.
Yeah. Yeah, immediately it's fear. And
which is, in that situation, you want to think, like, I mean, would you really, I don't know, like, try to, you know, like, you try to put yourself in that, you know, in that position and go like, okay, if our, in our really real world, all of a sudden we saw someone do something super, you know, like something out of like a superhero comic or movie or whatever, like, would you just be like, oh, this is amazing? Or would you be terrified?
Well, you also have to think, do they have the concept of superheroes in this universe? Yeah. And if they saw someone doing something bizarre and out of, and also it's not like, oh, this is the kid that we adopted or this was the kid that like we had naturally. It was, we found this kid.
Do you think that I assume that they came up with something. Oh, wait, no, because she's too old.
Yeah.
There'd be like, how does she get into school then? They have to have act like, she didn't have a social security number. She didn't have.
Yeah, that's tricky. That's trickier.
It's different with Superman when he's able to be like, oh, you know, they just have a baby. And you can go like, oh, there was that long winter, that hard winter. And we just didn't
that
come
hard
to
winter,
town.
We didn't go out anymore. Yeah. Yeah, that's tricky, and I'm not 100% sure what the answer would be there.
I mean, that's one of those things that is so obviously, like, wrong in you know, with those kinds of stories that it's, you know, you kind of just have to go, like, just don't even think about it.
Yeah, yeah.
Somehow it works out. Yeah. Or else,
but
you know,
like,
we have no story.
I really think it's interesting, though, too, that, like, it says so much about her parents that when their child is being talked to like that, then it's like, well, I guess you're not going to come by. I guess you're not going to be part of our lives then.
Yeah.
But yeah, and then there's kind of a nice, it goes from that flashback to the coach sitting at the table, being very suspicious again.
Yeah.
It's around that time that, and I think the parents are getting a little stricter and being like, you can't skip gym, you can't do this.
Yeah.
Like, you have to go to school, this is, you're gonna get, I think they say that she's grounded, because, like, no, you have to go to school, this is what happens when you don't go to school. At the same time, or, like, that night, Dolly point. I think it's Dolly, or maybe it is. This might be one of the things that some of the text messaging is not hard to read. This one in particular, because there's only one person writing, texting. Oh, no. Okay, this was Dolly. So Dolly figures out that LexCorp is the people behind the tracker, because it broke open in her bag, and she's like, so that's weird, right? And
they're a big company, though. I mean, what... I guess we don't know what they're supposed to be like in this universe.
Yeah. I mean, it's more of a thing like, readers, pay attention.
Yeah.
Or in case you didn't think it was ominous. And Kara keeps hearing someone say, save me, save me. She follows it to the evil coaches, who is a scientist. Oh, it's Coach Stone, her evil lair. And she ends up helping rescue this Kryptonian boy. She finds out Kryptonian.
Yeah. She didn't know what he was, but...
Yeah.
He looks like something out of a horror movie.
Yeah. Oh, this
But also still dreamy.
Oh, of course. No, that's how these things go. And also,
this, like,
all Kryptonians are... Yeah, all Kryptonians are very handsome. That's,
yeah. Well, okay. Fair enough. We could go with that the Kryptonians, just as a species, are just
very,
very attractive.
Good looking. This is also around the time that we do find out that Coach Stone is able to drain the power, because she uses one of the dials on her big computer to make Kara crumble to the floor.
Right.
There's
no denying now that there is a direct connection.
Yeah, and it's actually about renewable energy sources and, like, trying to basically changing the entire power grid. So it really was just a... It was 100% a Sailor Moon. They're just zapping all the energy of the right. teenagers.
Yeah, of course.
Yeah, of course. So she rescues the boy, whose name is... I wrote it down so that it's I wouldn't Tannon. Have to look it up. Tannon. You know, we just got through. We just got through with dealing with a space boy who's not a smart choice for Kara. Now we're just sucked right back into that.
Yeah.
Into that.
At least this guy, I think we could both easily agree on that he is not to be. He's not going to be good for her.
Yeah, a little bit. So she actually does recognize the language, which I'm just going to chalk up to, like, she remembers it from before, because she could obviously speak it when she was a little kid.
Right.
And he's the one who tells her that we're from Krypton. Do you not know that you're not from here? You are actually very powerful. And she's like, yeah, I kind of know that a little bit. And then I love the line, we must leave now, they have an army. Is your power restored? I just tore a hole through the roof of my eye, so yes, I mean, I think I'm okay.
It's cool to, I mean, I guess it will never not be cool to me to see when you kind of invert that damsel in distress trope and have her be the one that's just like, I mean, it's like every time it happens on the show, it's like always yeah. kind of fun to me. It's just because, you know, it's kind of sad that it's such an inversion of the trope, but it's still always just great to see her just getting to be the one. It's like, oh, it's not going to be about this guy being cool now or something. Like, she can just go be awesome.
Yeah. They have a few moments where, and he asks her her real name and she remembers it.
And oh, then, that kind of, that, like, why would he say your real name?
Oh, because he's a jerk. Because he's a gigantic jerk. I'm not saying this is good.
Does he know the name of the last name of every single family on Krypton?
Well, I assume that Danvers isn't a Kryptonian last name. I'm assuming it's.
Well, tell me a last name that doesn't sound like it could come from Earth.
L.
There's that you know that there got to be people whose last name is
okay,
just L.
No, it's not that there are Kryptonian names that could be Earth names. It's that there are Earth names that could be Kryptonian. That's what, like, I just don't think that there are a lot of Danvers on Krypton, and he probably knew that. I feel like there's only a small amount of, they have, for one, it's two syllables. So, and have you ever had have you ever seen a Kryptonian
her name
last
could
name?
Be, her first name could be Kara Dan. That sounds like a Krypton name. And then her last name is Verz.
Oh, okay.
All he right. didn't know. He didn't All see right, it written Chris. Down. He didn't see it written down like we did. She's like, hi, my name is Kara Dan Verz. And he's like, hi, my name's
yeah,
Tannon.
Yeah, because that's clearly how she pronounced. That's clearly the inflection she put on it.
Right, he's never Chris. Heard. He doesn't know.
Oh, man. So there's a moment, there are a couple...
That part bothered me. I'm sorry. Just that real name part bothered me.
No, I just assumed it's because he's a jerk and he sees her name, her Earth name, as inferior.
That's fair. But I mean, I was like, how does he even know? Anyway, you're probably right. I mean, I'm sure it just sounds wrong for...
And they're trying to set up... They're trying to set up... They're trying to set up the fact that he's a jerk before he fries the poor jogger lady, or the poor whoever it is. I don't know, it's a random person. Because that it would be completely out of nowhere if they didn't at least hint that he's kind of a jerk. Right. But yeah, and then they have, again, I really like Joelle Jones's art in this, because they have a lot of, there are a bunch of panels with them that's very romantic and really plays up those moments.
Yeah.
And you can totally tell why Kara would kind of start getting swept up by this, because, like, here's this really handsome boy who she just rescued. Like, she just got to be, like, the hero, a thing that she was worried she couldn't do anymore. And he tells her that that she belongs with his people and with him, and suddenly she's not alone in the universe anymore, et cetera, et cetera. And she's dealt with all this, and it's like, all this feels really realistic for a teenage girl, especially
oh,
one
totally.
That's just dealt with, like, all this stuff. And again, the art does a really good job of making these moments count, and they, like, the faces aren't wonky. They're all very like distinct facial choices, and I really like that.
Yeah, I thought that idea of suddenly there's like your whole normal life seems like so upside down, and then all of a sudden something comes in that tells you like, oh, there's this whole other thing you don't even know about, and that makes you like, oh, you're such a part of this. You feel like the normal world, you know, your normal life, you're not a part of it anymore. It seems all wrong. And then you have something like, oh, here's this special, unique thing that only you are a part of. And it's like, oh, you can immediately sort of see how appealing that would be to someone who's going through all this stuff.
I mean, that's a very big topic in like YA fiction. Yeah. For girls. And I'm not disparaging it whatsoever. But you can totally understand why she'd be into it, especially when she's been so frustrated and confused. Yeah. And then, so she decides that she decides she's going to run away. And
with this boy, who is clearly, he's got to be over 21.
Probably. I'm gonna say at least like probably 17. I'm being generous, but
because he's part of like some kind of like expedition something, right? He says he's some kind of like,
I'm checking. Let's see.
He says he's got some kind of job. He was sent there as part of some something. All right, everyone, that's where we're going to have to stop for this week. But don't worry, we will be back next week with the second part of our discussion about Supergirl being super. Thank you so much for listening. I am sorry. I would say I'm sorry in advance, but this is actually I'm sorry in retrospect, or I'm apologizing after the fact, because if you're hearing this, you've already listened to the episode. But the sound quality was really weird this week for some reason when we recorded this. Part of the reason why the episode was running late is because I had to do a lot of editing on trying to clean it up and just get some of the weird, odd noises out of there. No idea what happened. But Katie and I talked for like 2 hours about this 4 issues of this comic. And for some reason, it was just a lot of weird sound stuff. But I tried to clean it up. I think it's still, it came out okay. But hopefully, the next time we record, everything will be back to sounding more like normal. So, sorry. I'm apologizing in advance for the next episode. I mean, it's like a retrospect apology for this episode and then in advance for the next episode, because the next episode still has some of those problems. But I mean, I think it still sounds pretty listenable. Maybe you wouldn't have even noticed if I hadn't said anything, but I noticed. And I put a lot of work into trying to get it to sound better. So sorry, and I hope you appreciate all of that hard work. Anyway, thank you so much for listening. Don't forget to check us out on all of our various social media places. All of that stuff is in the show notes, which you can find at keepitclosetome.com. Just go and click on things to your heart's content. That would be my advice. If you dig the show, tell a friend about it, maybe. And, I don't know. You could leave a review on iTunes, all that kind of thing. I think that's basically the stuff that you need to know. And we'll see you next week.